WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 6th of March, 2019. It's awfully cold, 16 degrees, snow blanketed, and there's a lot of traffic. There's not going to be any worms this morning because there's a lot of early birds. Okay. This morning I'm gonna play. I'm pretty much gonna do what I did last week because I enjoyed it so much. This is The Shadow, Summer Program number 8. The title of this one is Murders in Wax. It was a summer program that the show picked up. Sometimes it's called Season 1A, starring Orson Welles as Lamont Cranston in The Shadow, and Margot Stevenson as Margot Lane. There is no Agnes Moorehead in the summer program. At varying air dates, varying reports of air dates. One I saw was the 24th of July, 1938. We'll go ahead and see if that's... Well, I won't see if it's accurate, but I'll go ahead and play it. Murders in Wax. Thanks for listening. This is Arthur in the Grand Hour.
Shadow, Lamont Cranston, a man of wealth, a student of science, and a master of other people's minds, devotes his life to righting wrongs, protecting the innocent, and punishing the guilty. Using advanced methods that may ultimately become available to all law enforcement agencies, Cranston is known to the underworld as the Shadow. Never seen, only heard. As haunting to superstitious minds as a ghost. As inevitable as a guilty conscience. The Shadow's true identity is known only to his constant friend and aide, Margot Lane. Today's story, Murders in Wax.
Ladies and gentlemen, we invite you to step inside and view the illuminating and educational exhibits that are the features of our waxworks. See Bluebeard actually slaying his 8 wives. See Custer's last stand. See the capture of George Keegan, public enemy number one. And many other thrilling, lifelike tableaux. The price of admission is only 1 dime, 10 cents. Our lecture is just starting, and if you hurry, 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 you'll be just in time to witness the complete show on the inside. Step right up now. How many for the
first? 2, please.
All right,
ladies and gentlemen, if you'll just step over here to the next platform, I shall describe to you the details of the feature tableau of our exhibit.
Say, they look like real people, don't they?
Yeah, how do they make them?
With wax.
Gee.
This tableau is a dramatic reenactment of the capture of George Keegan, the notorious gang chief of Prohibition Day.
Oh, that's how I was...
He was arrested in the manner shown right here. No doubt you all recognize the figures of the brave men who personally led the police squad who made the capture. On the left, the wax figure of our own Mayor Lewis. Center, our District Attorney Armstrong. And right, Police Commissioner Weston.
Were they really there when Keegan was caught?
Sure he was.
George Keegan's arrest put an end to the wave of crime and lawlessness that gripped our city for a decade. He is now imprisoned in the state penitentiary for the rest of his natural life.
Gee, the girl on the tableau sure looks lifelike.
Yeah.
Oh, ask them who she is.
Okay. Hey, Cap, who's that girl?
Just coming to that, brother. A little lady seated in the chair was Keegan's gun mom, Edna Kelly. She was with him in the hideout at the time of the raid.
Hey, look at that.
Look,
the wax figure fell off the chair.
Don't get excited, folks. It's only a wax figure. I'll just set it up again and...
Holy cats. It's real.
What?
It's the body. A dead body. A dead body of Edna Kelly.
Hey, it's really Edna Kelly.
Edna Kelly, how'd she get here?
She's been murdered.
Murdered!
Beautifully, but if you don't pull a trifle harder on that right oar, we'll hit that rock.
Sorry, there we are. A little rusty on navigation, Margaret. It's my first rowboat venture in the park this spring.
I'm really enjoying it. I need a little fresh air and sunshine after that experience at the waxworks yesterday. That was pretty terrible.
Did you ever happen to go to that place, Margaret?
Well, I was showing the town to my cousin Jane from upstate. We passed the waxworks museum, and she insisted on going in. She'd never seen a chamber of horrors.
And she saw more horror than she bargained for.
Yes, and so did I. I'll never forget it.
Just what was that wax tableau like?
It was set in a replica of a furnished room in the house where Keegan was captured.
Yes?
The figures of Mayor Lewis, District Attorney Armstrong, and Police Commissioner Weston were grouped about Keegan and Edna Kelly.
Didn't anyone notice that the figure of the Kelly girl was actually she until it fell from the chair?
No. The wax figures were so lifelike that no one suspected.
I see. Shall I roll over the island?
Oh, that'd be nice. Lamont, whom do you think killed Edna Kelly?
Well, she was a gunman's girl. Always the obvious suspects, her lovers, enemies, or even members of his gang who might be more comfortable with her out of the way. But somehow I don't think it was either of these.
Why, Lamont?
Doesn't it strike you that the substitution of the girl's body for the waxwork in such a spectacular fashion may have some deeper significance than a mere bizarre effect?
Oh, what do you mean?
It must have been the girl's connection with the other people represented in that group that motivated the murder in bringing her body there.
I don't quite understand.
My deductions are correct. The taking of Edna Kelly's life is only the first of a series of vengeful murders.
But Lamont, if that's true, isn't there anything you can do to forestall it?
Perhaps. I only knew a little more. I only knew where the killer plans to strike next.
Surely the Shadow can find that out.
With your help, Margot, perhaps he can.
A fine bunch of detectives I've got in this department. You call yourselves a homicide squad? That's a laugh.
But, Commissioner Weston, we've combed this city.
Hogan, have you checked on the story of the museum proprietor?
Commissioner, you talked to him yourself.
Have you verified his statements?
Yes, Chief, they're solid.
Yeah.
The murderer entered the Waxworks Museum by a back door. It was found jimmied. After he put Edna Kelly's body in a tableau, he took the wax image of her outside and buried under some trash in the alley.
Did you go over the image for fingerprints, Cardona?
Yeah, but we couldn't find anything.
Tell him about the face.
Oh, yeah, Commissioner. Funny thing, the face of the wax dummy had been sliced with a knife across the left cheek.
Why didn't you tell me that before? You know what that means as well as I do.
That's right. That's the mark of a squealer.
Yeah, but it couldn't have been any mob stuff. The probation report shows that Edna Kelly's been going straight ever since Keegan was sent away.
If you ask me, I think it was a lunatic that done it.
Yeah.
No sane guy had set a dead girl's body up for exhibition in that waxworks joint.
No, it looks to me like one of them love things. Some guy carrying a torch for Kelly. And
you're both wrong. It was no lunatic that committed that murder. Mm. And Edna Kelly hasn't gone out with anyone since Keegan started his stretch.
Then what, Chief?
Edna Kelly was murdered for vengeance by someone who wanted to settle a score with her lover, George Keegan. Keegan can't be reached in the big house, so they take it out on the girl.
And what about the mark of the squealer on the face of the wax figure?
That ties right in. That was the murderer's way of telling Keegan what he thought of him. Keegan has saved his neck by squealing on a dozen guys.
Say, that's right.
Yeah. Of course it's right. Cardona, first thing in the morning, I want you and Hogan to conduct a general roundup of every known enemy of George Keegan.
That won't do any good, Commissioner.
Hit the Shadow.
Where is he? Don't trouble to find him. Why are you here, Shadow?
To aid you in capturing the murderer of Edna Kelly.
What do you know about the case?
I know that you shouldn't be wasting your men's time rounding up possible suspects while the real assassin is left free to strike his next blow.
Now, see here, Shadow. Don't tell me how to run my department.
Hold on, Weston. I have every reason to suspect that the placing of the Kelly girl's body in the wax tableau was intended as a warning of other deaths to follow.
Other deaths? You think there's going to be more killings?
Be quiet, Hogan. Tell me what you mean, Shadow.
I mean that the other people represented in that wax tableau are in danger of being killed, too. And they're the mayor, the district attorney, and you yourself, Commissioner Weston.
That sounds preposterous.
Not at all. My advice is that you act quickly. One of you may be at this moment in imminent peril.
Oh, come, come, Shadow. What possible motive could the murderer of the girl have for wishing to kill us as well? I think that you're... Excuse me. Hello?
Mrs. Armstrong, the district attorney's wife, wants to talk to you.
Put her on.
Hello? Hello?
Yes, Mrs. Armstrong. This is Commissioner Weston.
Oh, Commissioner, I'm dreadfully worried about John.
What's wrong?
Well, shortly after dinner, he went out. Said he might take a walk. Several hours passed, and he didn't return. I must have fallen asleep. And when I woke up a few minutes ago, he still hadn't come back. Oh, this isn't like John, Commissioner.
What time is it now?
It's after 2 a.m.
Well, now, don't be alarmed, Mrs. Armstrong. He's probably detained somewhere on business. I'll try to locate him for you and call you back.
Oh, thank you.
District Attorney has disappeared.
Disappeared? Say,
well, maybe... Commissioner Weston?
Do you think, Shadow, that...
Yes, Commissioner. I fear that the killer has struck again.
Can't be.
If I were you, I would go to the Waxworks Museum. At once. You may arrive in time to stop this murderer from completing his monstrous work.
Museum, Commissioner Weston.
Sergeant, take some men around to guard the back door.
Yes, sir.
Cardona, has anyone any keys to this place?
No, sir. We'll have to force the lock.
All right, go to it.
Okay.
I'll help you. Get in there.
All right.
Come in.
All right. Now, where's the light switch?
Never mind that. Use your flashlights.
Okay. Hey, kind of scary in here, ain't it?
Yeah, it gives you the creeps.
Hey, what's that?
Where?
That guy over there. Got a knife.
Don't shoot, you fool. That's one of the wax dummies.
Oh.
Now, where is this Keegan tableau?
It's right over here on the left.
Oh. So that's it.
Well, I guess nothing's happened yet, Chief. Doesn't look like anything's been disturbed. That's the wax dummy of District Attorney Armstrong sitting down in a chair. Sitting down? Hey, it seems to me his dummy was standing up the last time he was here.
What? Give me a lift up on the platform, quick.
Yeah.
You think it may be this? I don't know. Flash the light over here. Good heavens. It's Armstrong.
Is it really District Attorney Armstrong?
Yes. Dead.
Murdered. And he was brought here just like the Shadow said he...
Yes. Just as I said, gentlemen. I'm sorry that I couldn't have warned you earlier.
Who did this thing, Shadow? Do you know? Who did it?
I'm not sure. But with your cooperation, Commissioner Weston, together we may bring about his downfall.
How?
I am positive now that either you or Mayor Lewis... the next victim marked to go. Guard yourselves well.
I'll attend to that, all right.
You'll hear from me soon, Commissioner. When the Shadow finds out who the killer is, he will be brought to justice.
Quite evident now, Margot, even to Commissioner Weston, that the killer's aim to do away with everyone concerned in that tableau.
Then, Lamont, you mean the mayor, the commissioner, and Keegan? They're the only ones left.
Exactly. Let me see. I should take a right turn here.
Lamont, do you believe these murders were the work of a madman?
Not at all. I think that whoever's behind all this is quite sane, Margot, quite sane.
What makes you say that?
There's some important civic figures in that group. Their removal would be highly advantageous to a political rival.
Surely, political rivalry wouldn't be sufficient motive for these horrible crimes.
I wonder.
And besides the girl, Edna Kelly, how would she fit into that picture?
That's what we're driving up here to find out. Where's the prison now?
A cheerful-looking spot.
I'll drive you up to the gate and let you out. I shan't go in with you.
Why not?
The warden, Mr. Driscoll, has never been a particular admirer of mine. Feeling which I reciprocate.
Why, Lamont?
Well, I had occasion to expose the graft-ridden conditions in this prison a few years ago. Naturally, that didn't make me too popular with Mr. Driscoll. Here we are. Now, remember what I told you?
I think so. I'm a reporter from the Daily Globe. I'm to ask for an interview with Edna Kelly's sweetheart, Keegan. And when I see him, I'll try to find out from him. Please tell me something, Mr. Keegan. The readers of the Daily Globe have sent us thousands of letters expressing their interest in your reaction to the tragic death of Miss Kelly.
I ain't got nothing to say about it.
Do you believe that the killing was executed by one of your enemies?
I wouldn't know.
You loved Edna Kelly, didn't you?
Hey, what are you giving out with, the Lonely Hearts column?
No. No, you see...
Lay off that love stuff.
But, Mr. Keegan, I was sent up here by my paper to get a human interest story from you. And after all, well, you were fond of Miss Kelly. She was your girl.
My girl? Oh, no.
But
I'll tell you what Edna Kelly was. She was the same as any other dame, see? She was a double crosser.
But I thought...
Wait a minute, Wynn. Wait a minute, I didn't mean that. Don't write nothing like I just said there. I get a little screwy sometimes when I think about what happened to you.
Oh, of course. I understand.
So just don't write nothing, will you?
But what about this theory that she was slain by one of your enemies, Mr. Keegan?
I wouldn't know.
I tell you, Lamont, he flared up so suddenly when I asked him if he really loved her. I was scared to death.
He called her a double-crosser, eh?
Yeah, but he regretted it the next second. He asked me to be sure and not write anything about it.
It's most interesting, Margot, and thank you for your excellent work.
But has what I told you helped you unravel any?
Greatly.
Well, what happens now?
I think that there are many more interesting facts to be learned there at prison.
Yes?
This evening, the Shadow shall pay a call on his old friend... Warden Driscoll.
Come in.
Can I see you for a minute, Warden?
What's the trouble, Kay?
Well, it's about Keegan.
Well, what about him?
Well, I put him in solitary like you told me.
Yes, yes.
That was this morning I done that.
Hey, Carrie, what are you trying to tell me?
Well, he ain't had no food for the last three meals.
So?
So I was wondering if something should be done to make him eat. He just lays quiet on his bunk.
And I thought I told you that no one was to go near Keegan's cell without my orders.
Well, I thought if he wasn't eating...
Harry, if you just perform your duties as guard around here and let the warden do the thinking, everything will be satisfactory.
Yeah, sure, warden, sure.
And leave Keegan alone.
Yeah, yes, sir. I'm sorry. Good night, warden.
Close that door after you.
Yes, sir. Fool.
Hello? Yes? Oh, yes, Mac. Oh, did he get away all right? Good. Yeah? Uh-huh. Well, get him back here before daylight, no matter what happens. Yeah, okay. Tell him I hope he does a good job. Huh? Yeah. Yeah. Now, goodbye.
You seem to be quite amused, Warden Driscoll.
Huh? Hey, what? Who's that?
Won't you share your little joke with me?
Carrie, are you outside that door? Is that you talking? Carrie, if this is your idea of something funny...
This is not Carrie.
Well, who are you?
I am the Shadow.
The Shadow?
Yes, Warden.
Well, why are you here? What do you want with me?
I came in when Carrie left. I overheard your phone conversation, Driscoll. It was very interesting.
Really?
Yes. I'm more than curious to know who you were talking about.
Now, listen, Shadow... What business
have
you...
It wouldn't have been George Keegan.
Oh, now, see here. I have had enough of
this. Wait, Warden. I wouldn't advise you to leave until we've finished our conversation.
Well, what are you after, Shadow?
I am seeking the murderer of Edna Kelly and District Attorney Armstrong.
Well, why look here?
Because this is where he is to be found.
Who do you mean?
George Keegan.
Keegan? Oh, that's preposterous. How could a man in prison for the rest of his life suddenly commit two murders in a city 50 miles away?
Very simple, Warden. He just go there.
Are you inferring that Keegan has escaped?
Oh, no, nothing as crude as that. But if he were allowed to, shall we say, take a leave of absence for a night...
Keegan has never left these buildings.
Where is he now?
In his cell.
Oh, no, he isn't. I investigated before I came here. And his cell is empty.
Oh, yes. Yes, that's right. I forgot. He's in solitary confinement.
You mean his cot is stuffed with pillows to make it appear as if he were in solitary confinement?
Ah, that's not true.
I'll tell you where George Keegan is. He's on his way to the city right now to add another link to his chain of cold-blooded murders. He's gone there with your full knowledge and consent.
No, no.
It would be a great political advantage for you to have the District Attorney Armstrong, the Mayor Lewis, and Commissioner Weston out of the way. Wouldn't it, Warden?
Oh, you don't know what you're talking about.
It's an easy thing to prey upon the susceptible jealousies of a man like Keegan until you've goaded him into carrying out your evil wishes.
You can never prove what you're saying.
I haven't time to right now, Warden. The lives of the mayor and the commissioner are at stake unless I'm able to stop Keegan. I shall present more than enough proof necessary to implicate you to the district attorney's office in the morning. So you'd better think hard and fast, Warden Driscoll. Margot Lane. Calling Margot Lane. Telephone Police Commissioner Weston immediately. There's no time to lose. Tell him that tonight both he and the mayor are in great danger. Even now it may be too late. If they do have time to follow up my instructions, tell them that they must follow my instructions.
All right, Mr. Mayor. Stay sitting at that desk and keep your back to me. I got a gun here. Don't turn around. Just listen. I'm George Keegan. Remember me? You was one of the heroes that made the pinch when I was picked up. You must remember. Why, they even got a little statue of you and me down at the Wax Museum. Now do you know? You'd better know, Mr. Mayor. Because I'm sending you down personally to take that statue's place. Well, why don't you say something? Are you scared to talk? Where's all that fancy gab that you hand out at banquets and meetings? Come on, speak up. Come on, what's the matter with you? Speak up, will you? All right, then you'll get yours just the same. Looks like I just brought about a special election. Now, Mr. Mayor, I'll just take this corpse of yours down to the museum and then... Hey, what's this? This ain't nobody. It's a dummy, a plant. What?
You've gotten your targets mixed, haven't you, Keegan?
Who's that?
Aren't you surprised to find yourself shooting at a wax dummy?
Come on out in the open. Who are you?
I'm right here with you. I am your shadow.
Come on, Ken, that phony talk. What are you, a copper?
No, just your personal nemesis, Keegan. Now I'd advise you to drop that gun.
Not a chance.
Close in on him, Commissioner Weston.
Why? Open your hands, Keegan.
Let go of me. Let go of me.
Take that gun away from him.
Here you are, Chief.
This is your waxworks murderer, Commissioner.
Thank you, Shadow.
You guys ain't got nothing on me.
How did you get out of jail, Keegan?
I flew out the window.
With the help of Warden Driscoll.
Is this true? Did Driscoll aid you in these crimes?
Driscoll wasn't in.
Who's that?
Ah, I see you've caught him. Good work, Commissioner.
Hello, Warden Driscoll. What brings you here?
This man, Keegan, escaped from my prison tonight. And I learned that his purpose in leaving was to make good a threat he'd made on the life of our mayor.
Hey, what is this baloney you're throwing out, Warden?
Quiet, you. I've just learned that this isn't the first time he's got out either.
A very good story, Warden. Only I think that George Keegan could tell us a different one.
Shadow, you here?
Yes. And I sort of expected you'd come too, Warden.
What's this all about, Shadow?
Perhaps Keegan can explain that to you, Commissioner.
How about that?
Listen, I ain't no squealer, see? But that Warden ain't telling the truth, not one bit. That's all I gotta say.
Hey, Commissioner, what is this all about? Am I being placed under suspicion here in the testimony of a shadow?
Just a minute, Warden. What are you holding back, Keegan?
I can answer that for you, Commissioner Weston. Keegan is shielding the Warden as the real instigator of the Waxworks murders.
That's a lie.
He wanted you all out of the way, Commissioner, so he employed Keegan as his instrument of murder.
Don't listen to him.
Go on, Shadow.
But first, he had to give Keegan sufficient incentive to perform these crimes, so he went to work on his emotions, his jealousy.
How?
He told Keegan that his girl, Edna Kelly, had been double-crossing him. Right along. Keegan, this was a lie.
Huh? What, you mean she was on a level?
Absolutely, Keegan.
Why, Driscoll, you dirty...
Look out, he's got another gun.
Don't,
Keegan,
don't. Go on. Go on, roll in pain. Just like Edna done before she died. That's right. Try to talk. That's what she done, too. And I laughed at her. I laughed at her. Laughed at
her,
that's what I did.
Take him away.
Laughed at
her. Driscoll is dead, Commissioner.
Well, perhaps that's for the best. Shadow, are you still there?
Yes, Commissioner.
I want to thank you heartily for this night's work.
I seek no credit, Commissioner. However, I have a suggestion for you.
What's that?
If the Wax Museum decides to create a new tableau depicting this present event, it might be wise for you to arrange to be excluded from it. It gives people ideas. The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The shadow knows.
Thank you, lads. Sorry about that hiccup. That was Murders in Wax, summer program number 8, The Shadow. I think the original air date was the 24th of July, 1938, starring Orson Welles as Lamont Cranston in The Shadow, Margot Stevenson as Margot Lane, all the secondary players and performers. They're not listed. I don't, probably part of a troupe, but that would have been different probably from the season one, because that's summer programs referred to as season 1A. Okay, now we're going to have to take care of some FCC business. You're listening to Arthur and the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0, all guns are always loaded. Rule 1, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Next up, for the second half of the Grand Hour, we're going back to the Six Shooter. This would be episode 27, titled Aunt Emma. An original air date, April Fool's Day, 1954. I'll go ahead and jump into that. Some of my listeners, if I still have them, will enjoy this.
You'll hear James Stewart as the Six Shooter, just one of many fine programs brought to you each week on NBC. Tomorrow night, there's top comedy entertainment with the Bob Hope Show, the Phil Harris, Alice Faye Show, and Can You Top This with Senator Ford? Bob Hope delivers rapid-fire comedy routines, while Phil Harris and Alice Faye bring both mirth and music. It's a great Friday night lineup of comedy programs, all of them heard only on NBC. James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western Territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
This was my first trip into Powder Creek for, 3 months, I suppose. Working the spring roundup for Bar Y have been keeping me pretty busy, and there hadn't been any special reason for coming to town, but I figure it's about time to make an appearance. Scar's saddle was showing a lot of wear and tear, and, well, my own outfit didn't exactly look like it had just arrived fresh from the mail order house. Pants were getting a little thin around the seat, and there was a pretty big hole in the sleeve of my jacket. I'd tried to patch it up, but I hadn't done a very good job. So I left Scar at the livery stable and headed over to Ethan Green River's general store. I aimed to get another jacket and a new pair of breeches, shirt or two. And I'd probably be able to find out what's been going on in the town while I was at it. Ethan usually managed to keep up on the latest Powder Creek happenings. Well, the store hadn't changed much. Everything seemed to be about the same. And Ethan, he hadn't changed much either. He must be almost 65 by now. He sure didn't look that old, though. Standing there by the pickle barrel, munching on a great big fat juicy dill. Howdy, Ethan.
Well, I've been wondering when you was going to honor us with your presence, Britt.
That's so.
Yes, sir. I was remarking about you just this morning to old Miss Bennett when she come in to get some yardage for a new dress. I said to Miss Bennett, about time for the Six Shooter to be coming into town. He's sort of overdue, I said.
Overdue? What are you talking about, Ethan?
Well, there's mail for you, for one thing. Letter. Somebody in Topeka, Kansas, from the looks of the envelope.
Oh, must be from Aunt Emma. She lives in Topeka.
Oh, she does, eh? Well, here you are, Britt.
Thanks.
According to the postal rules, I should have sent it back when you didn't show up, but I figured I could stretch your point. Well, ain't you going to read it?
Oh, sure.
Let's see. Oh, my. Oh, that pickle sure is bitter.
Good.
Must have got too much vinegar in this batch. You know, to this, I ain't very fond of dills anyhow. Don't know why I keep on eating them.
Holy smoke.
Hmm? Was something the matter, Britt?
Holy. Well, it's a letter from Aunt Emma. She's coming out here to Powder Creek.
Oh, gonna pay you a little visit, huh? Now, ain't that nice?
No, it's more than just a visit, Ethan.
Oh?
No, she's figuring on settling down here.
Well.
She aims to make this her home, look.
Uh-huh. Well, there's lots worse places a buddy can live.
No, but she expects me to live with her. She says she's gonna keep house for me.
Well,
holy smoke.
Now, that's real considerate of her. Real considerate.
No, but I appreciate her wanting to look after me, but why, well, doggone it, Ethan. Now, you know I couldn't settle down, not permanently. I'm used to traveling around and living alone and bunking wherever my fancy strikes. You know that.
Yeah, sure. But maybe it's good for you to take root someplace, huh? You know what they say, Britt. Rolling stone gathers no moss. Living alone does have its disadvantages.
Oh, well, now you're a fine one to talk.
Well,
I haven't noticed you making any effort to acquire a family.
Oh, now look here, I'm a lot older than you are. Too old to change my ways. But you're still a young buck. You ought to be sort of a pliable like. Yes, sir, I think you ought to take your aunt up on this here offer of her.
You don't think anything of the kind,
Ethan.
You no, you do not. You're just trying to get my goat, that's all.
Not at all.
I know you. I'll just write Aunt Emma tonight, and I'll thank her for what she wants to do for me. But I'll just explain. I'll just explain to her and tell her.
I kind of doubt that a letter would reach her in time to hit her off, Britt.
What?
Yeah, that one she sent you has been here for several weeks now.
Oh, yes, well, I guess I'll just send her a telegram then. That line out of Powder Creek is still working, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Ain't been a single breakdown lately, not since them Apaches headed south back into their own territory.
Yeah, well, that's what I'll do then. I'll just telegraph her.
Well, I kind of doubt that a telegram would do much good either.
Huh?
Seeing as how your Aunt Emma's already in Powder Creek.
Yeah, well, I'll send her one anyhow.
What? Yes, sir. She got here a week ago last Tuesday. Come in on the Saturday. Casey brung a whole load of furniture, too.
Well, now, hold on, Ethan. Now, you're not serious. You're joking.
Well, no, I'm not. Just you take a stroll over to the old Mac Dennis house. You know, on the corner behind the bank?
Yeah.
Your aunt rented the place right after she arrived. Must be all moved in by now.
Well, I just don't know what to say.
I understand she's got your room all fixed up waiting for you.
My room?
Well, that's what she's here for, ain't it? To look after you.
Well, I don't need any looking after.
Well, maybe not. Maybe not, but it appears Aunt Emma's got other ideas. Seems to be a real understanding, lady, though. Says it's all right for you to keep Scar if your heart's set on it.
To keep Scar? What?
Well, she probably don't care much for horses herself, you see.
Now, you just listen to me, Ethan Green River. I'm not going to live here in that... I never asked Aunt Emma to go. She shouldn't take it upon herself to, without my... With the old Mac Dennis house, you said.
Yeah, that's the one. Ain't very fancy, but from here on, it's going to be home sweet home. Hey, Britt?
Yeah, I'll just see about that.
Goodness sakes, how you've grown, Britt.
Oh, now, Aunt Em, now, I had my full growth the last time you saw me. I was 25 years old.
Well, now it seems to me you've shot up some since then. Not much flesh on you, though. Fact is, you're just plain skinny.
Yeah, well, I reckon being so tall make me a little thinner than I really am, you know, sort of appear to be.
Your father was just as tall as you are, but... He must have been a good 20 pounds heavier.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Well, we'll put some flesh on those bones of yours. A couple of good home-cooked meals, and you'll start filling in.
Yes.
You like the house, Britt?
Yes. It seems real comfortable.
Well, I haven't quite finished unpacking yet, and some of the big pieces have got to be moved. I was waiting for you to give me a hand.
Yes, I'll be glad to, Aunt Anne.
Your room's right over there if you want to take a look at it. Go on, Britt, go on. Oh, you needn't be afraid I fixed it up real frilly or anything like that.
Oh, no, I wasn't worried about that.
Well?
It looks fine. It's just fine.
Just take a good feel of that bed. I bet you don't get a soft mattress like that in the bunkhouse where you've been sleeping.
No, we sure don't.
I'm working on a patch quilt for it. Started before I left Kansas. Expect I'll have it finished up in a week or so. Well...
Adam, before you go to too much trouble...
Yes, Britt?
I didn't know you were coming to Powder Creek.
Yes, Mr. Green River told me you hadn't been in to pick up my letter. You must have been kind of surprised to find out I was already here.
I was practically flabbergasted, yes. Whatever made you decide to come west?
I'll tell you all about it while I'm fixing supper. Come on out in the kitchen.
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, shucks. I was going to have a real fancy meal for you first night in your new home, but you didn't give me enough warning. So I'll just have to warm up yesterday's pot roast, if that's all right.
Oh, there's nothing I like better.
Oh, there's some potatoes in that sack. Would you mind peeling a couple of them for me?
No, not bad.
Right here. Can I use this pan? The knife's in the drawer beside you. Not the butcher knife. Oh. Here now, this one.
Oh, I see. That'll be better.
Well, now, about my coming to Powder Creek, Britt. I just felt it was my bounden duty.
You, ma'am?
Well, you see, Carrie got married last February.
Carrie?
My youngest girl, your cousin Carrie.
Oh, cousin Carrie.
She was almost 30, and I was beginning to wonder whether she'd ever get a... Well, she finally found herself a real nice man. Yes, he works for the Santa Fe Railroad Company. Got him a train ticket at half price.
Uh-huh, is that so?
Well, anyway, after she left home, that meant my family was all taken care of. My immediate family, that is.
Uh-huh.
And then I got to thinking about you. My only brother's son. All alone with nobody to look after you.
Well, I've been getting along all right, Aunt
Em. Now, don't you try to tell me that. If ever I saw a man that needed a woman to take a hold of him, Why, those clothes you're wearing are a disgrace.
Oh, yes, these are... Well, I was going to buy some new ones today.
Well, if they was washed and ironed and mended proper, you wouldn't be needing new clothes all the time. A wife, that's what you really ought to have. But I suppose you're like the rest of the Ponsetts. Put off everything until the last minute.
Well, I don't know. Going it alone
is expensive, Fred. Oh, I'm not saying the two can live as cheap as one. And I don't want you to get the idea that I expect you to support me.
Well, it's never even crossed my mind.
No, indeed. I've still got some of the money your Uncle George left. And my boys both send me a little bit from time to time. I don't imagine we'll have any finance problems, Fred.
Well, you see, Aunt Em, I'm signed up with the Bar Y, and I'm sorry, but I just can't very well stay on here in town with you.
Well, there are other jobs besides ranching.
Well, it's about all I'm good for.
Oh, fiddlesticks. I've had a talk with Mr. Allington at the bank. He says he'll give you a position the minute you say the word.
Oh, for Pete's sake. Me work in a bank? Oh, no, Aunt Em, in a bank? I wouldn't know the first thing about it.
Oh, well, now that don't seem to bother Mr. Allington. He was real pleased with the idea. Said it would probably cut down some of his losses, having you as an employee. Ooh, what's the matter, Britt?
Oh, sort of nicked my finger a little bit. Nothing serious.
Oh, here, you can use this piece of rag for a bandage. It's clean.
Oh, no, Auntie.
You don't want to get blood poisoning, do you?
No,
go ahead now, tie it on.
All right.
And you'd better let me finish those potatoes. You're peeling them. There wouldn't be enough left to cook.
Well, you see, what I'm getting at, Aunt Em, is, well, I'm not the stay-and-put type of man. I'm sort of used to being on the move. You understand?
Britt Ponsett, it's high time you lit someplace. Oh, I've heard about you and that gun of yours all the way back to Kansas. It's a wonder to me you haven't been shot up half a dozen times by now. At least those stories folks tell are true.
Well, the stories probably did some growing on their way east.
I'll bet I know one thing you don't. They've even got a title for you back there.
Oh?
Mm-hmm. The Six Shooter. That's what they call you.
No.
As if the name of Ponsett wasn't good enough. Oh. Well, don't you feel too bad about it, dear. After we live here in peace and quiet for a spell, everybody will forget all about those escapades of yours.
Uh-huh. Now, Aunt Emma, there's just something I've got to explain to you. And I want you to understand that
I know what you're trying to say. You think I'm making a big sacrifice in coming here and setting up a home for you.
No, not exactly.
It's no sacrifice, Britt. No, indeed. And it's not just a feeling of duty, either. The plain truth is, I wanted to come.
Oh?
It's kind of hard to put into words, but... Well, after George died, I still had the children to keep me busy. But now there's no one. No one but you. I guess I'm the kind of person that just has to have somebody to worry over. Must be my nature. And I'm only 60, Britt. I ought to be able to run a house for a good 10 years yet. The Ponsetts are long-lived as a rule.
Oh, sure.
So I just don't know what I'd have done if there hadn't been somebody I could be of use to. I guess you're kind of a godsend, Britt. It looks like I need you more than you need me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I reckon we both need each other, Aunt Em. I made out about as well as could be expected that first night I stayed with Aunt Emma. I wasn't exactly what you'd call comfortable. The bed was too darn soft for one thing. And it wasn't easy getting used to having another person around all the time. Leastways, it wasn't easy getting used to Aunt Emma. I knew she had my best interest.
Brett Ponsett, you eat the rest of those turnips, they're good for you. And that... Oh, before I forget it, don't you think you ought to see about getting a haircut? It's hanging way down the back of your neck.
And whenever she asked me to do something, well, I sure didn't have any right to object. They were things that had to be done.
And a sack of flour, a spool of number 60 white thread, and some empty fruit jars. I think I'll put up some of that rhubarb out in the garden. Looks real nice to me.
And as for the advice you gave me, well, it was probably good advice. Well worth listening to.
I just don't see why you can't try working at the bank, Britt. If you don't take to it, you can always quit. I'm not saying that you have to keep on with it for the rest of your life.
Well, after a week, I knew that I couldn't go on much farther, so... And when Dan Porterfield came in, I told him I'd be back at the ranch by the end of the month. But I sure didn't know how I was going to manage it. I just couldn't leave Aunt Em, not without hurting her. She just needed somebody like me to fuss over her. There wasn't anyone else who seemed to fit the bill. At least nobody I could think of right offhand.
Yeah. Here's the last of it, Britt. Coffee, salt, bacon, cook material. That's all in it.
Yeah, that's all, Ethan.
I'll say one thing. You sure surprised me, Britt.
I don't see why.
Well, I do. I figured you wouldn't stay on with your aunt not more than 2-3 days at the very outside. But by Jiminy, it's over a week now, ain't it?
Oh, no, it hasn't been a week, but it... Oh, it couldn't be that long. By George, it is a week, anyway. Well, the time sure does fly when a man's contented and satisfied.
Huh?
Ethan, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. You remember the other day when you first told me Aunt Emma was in town?
Sure.
Well,
sure.
Now, the truth of the matter is I was kind of upset. I didn't exactly welcome the idea.
It ain't no secret, Britt. I guess I know how I'd feel was I in your place.
Well, that's just it, Ethan. I never realized what I've been missing all these years.
What are you talking about?
I want to tell you that I wouldn't give up living with Aunt Em for all the gold in California. In the first place, she's the finest cook that ever lived. Why, her hot biscuits alone is enough to make your mouth water, and that isn't the half of it. She takes care of all my clothes. You know, I can put on a clean pair of socks every day if I have a mind to do it.
No.
A clean pair every single day if I want to. But the best part of it is that I'm not lonely anymore. Gosh, it sure is nice to have somebody to talk to and to play casino with in the evenings. Yeah? Of course, I know none of this sounds appealing to you, Ethan, but... Gosh, I sure hope I never have to go back to living alone. Well, see you later.
Huh? Oh, yeah. I'll be seeing you, Britt.
Britt, you forgot to get a wick for the lamp.
Oh, yes, guess it did. Well, it sort of slipped my mind.
You sure aren't much good at remembering things.
Oh, well, I'll go back uptown and pick one up. It'll only take a minute.
Oh, never mind. We can do without until tomorrow. Better get your hands washed, son. Supper will be ready in a little bit.
Yes, ma'am. By the way, I had a little chat with Ethan Greenriver this afternoon.
Yes, nice.
You know, I kind of feel sorry for him. He living alone, and nobody'd care whether he comes or goes and all that.
Well, by his own choice, I'm sure.
I was just thinking, maybe we could have him over to supper one night.
Oh. Well, now, Britt, I'm not as young as I used to be, and getting on food for company, that's kind of an effort.
Oh, but it wouldn't have to be anything special. And besides, it might be nice for you and Ethan to sort of get together, get a little better acquainted.
You don't think I'd so much as look at another man after your Uncle George, do you? I'm surprised.
Oh, no, I didn't mean anything like that.
Well, I should hope not.
Oh, no. No, the fact is, Ethan is kind of spoken for in a way.
You don't say.
Oh, yes. Maude Hinsdale. She's got her eye on him.
Hinsdale,
yes. You know, the soprano in the church choir, the screechy one.
Oh, yes.
And come to think of it, somebody was telling me Maude was sort of worried about you when you first showed up. And she was afraid another widow might give her some competition for Ethan. And she's been having trouble enough landing them as it is, you know.
Well, she needn't have concerned herself.
Oh, she's not concerned now. Not since she's seen you.
What?
No, at least that's the story I got.
Well, for Maud Hinsdale's information, I've had plenty of chances to remarry since your uncle passed on.
Oh, sure you have, Annie. I'm sure you have.
And now that you mention it, tomorrow night might be a very good time to have Mr. Green River over for supper. I was planning on chicken and dumplings, and there'll be plenty for three.
Well, now, you're sure it won't mean too much work for you?
Oh, what's a little work, Britt? This is your home as much as it is mine. Your friends are always welcome.
Oh, fine, fine, Anna. That's real generous of you.
I won't be able to eat again for a month of Sundays, Miss Bancroft. That's all there is to it.
Oh, now, Mr. Greenwood.
It's the truth.
There's another whole apple pie we haven't even touched. I thought with two strong, healthy men like you, one pie wouldn't be near enough.
Oh, no, please, not another mouthful.
Well, if you're absolutely certain I can't tempt you to more of anything, I guess I might as well clear off the table.
Can I help you, Anne?
Why, Fritz, you know I don't like anybody in my kitchen. You two just go in the parlor and enjoy yourselves. I'll be along in a minute.
Yes, Sir Britt. You wasn't exaggerating one little bit. That aunt of yours is just about the finest cook I ever come across.
It's mighty nice of you to say that, Ethan, considering that this is just a sort of a plain, ordinary, run-of-the-mill supper. It's about like what we get every night.
No.
Oh, yes. Sunday dinner. Now, there. That's when she really puts herself out.
Oh, dear.
Oh, yes, that's Sunday.
Well, you don't suppose you can manage to get me an invite to one of her Sunday meals, do you, Britt?
No, I don't know.
Oh, no, look, Britt, I'd sure appreciate it.
Well, I can't promise anything, but I'll do my best. Well, for the next 10 days or so, Ethan was practically a steady boarder at Aunt Emma's. And he sure did put it away, too. Aunt Emma didn't seem to mind. She said she liked to see a man enjoy his food, and Ethan more than obliged her. I tried to leave them alone as often as I could, but as far as I could tell, their friendship just didn't seem to be progressing past the dining room table. Looked like I just have to sort of give Ethan a little touch of spur. So, one evening after spare ribs and sauerkraut, while Aunt Em was out in the kitchen doing the dishes...
Oh, you gotta let my belt out another notch. That's all there is to it.
Ethan?
Yeah?
There's something I've been meaning to ask you.
Go right ahead, Britt.
Well, now, you know I'm Aunt Emma's only relative.
Uh-huh.
In Powder Creek, that is.
Yeah.
She's sort of my responsibility.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, what I'm getting at is your intentions.
My what?
Your intentions about Emma.
I see what you're driving at now, Britt. You don't have anything to worry about.
I don't?
No. I won't deny I'm real fond of Emma, and it's more than just a cooking, too. Under other circumstances, I might even consider asking her to marry me.
Other circumstances?
Yeah, well, you told me how you'd feel if anything happened to upset this little home you've got here, and I'd be the last man in the world to cause you any misery, Britt. Why, you're one of my closest friends.
Now, just hold on here a minute.
Now, look, Britt, you can take my word for it. You and Emma can live on here together just as long as you've a mind to, and I won't do a thing to interfere.
But I'd like you to interfere.
Huh?
If you want to marry Aunt Emma, and she wants to marry you, you'd be doing me a favor.
No, Britt. I just won't let you make such a sacrifice.
A sacrifice?
Yes, that's just what it is, a sacrifice.
All right, Ethan. You can believe whatever you like, but I've made up my mind. I'm not staying here in Powder Creek. I'm heading back to the Bar Y the first thing in the morning, and after I'm gone, Aunt Em will be all alone here, all alone, unless you plan to do something about it. Well, I guess I really wouldn't have gone through with it, leaving Aunt Em, I mean. But I was pretty sure that Ethan really liked her. and all he needed was a little prod. Well, a big prod. Anyhow, I got Scar out of the bar and rode around for an hour or so. But when I came back to the house, Ethan's buggy was gone. It was maybe he hadn't proposed at all, or maybe she turned him down. Well, only one way to find out, and that's go inside.
What happened to you, Briggs?
Oh, well, I just wanted to give Scar a chance to stretch his legs.
Oh. I thought maybe you were giving Ethan a chance to propose to me.
He asked you to marry him?
That was the general idea.
I see. Turned him down, huh?
Is that what you thought I'd do?
Well, I was afraid you... I figured you'd be worried about what would happen to me. That was all.
I'm not the least bit worried about what'll happen to you, Brett Ponsett.
What?
Why, I've known since the first week you moved in here that it just wouldn't work out. It's clear as day that you and that horse of yours aren't going to be happy unless you're roving around somewhere, bedding down without a roof over your head. Oh, I saw those blankets of yours on the floor. I know how you've been sleeping.
Well,
yes. It appears to me that there are some men who take to being looked after and cared for, and there are some who just don't. Huh. That's why I agreed to marry Ethan.
You accepted him?
Of course I did. He's the kind of man who'll take to being looked after.
Well, I hope you're right, Aunt Em. I sure hope you're right. And you know she was? She was 100% right. Why, the next time I came through Powder Creek to visit Aunt Em and Uncle Ethan, well, sir, he was just about the most married man I ever saw. And so help me, he seemed to enjoy it, too. Of course, maybe when I'm his age, I guess I don't need to start worrying about it now.
Okay, that was The Six Shooter, episode 27, Aunt Emma, had an original air date of the 1st of April, 1954. Interesting note about that is it moved from its time slot from Sunday, that was its first Thursday evening broadcast. I was reading some of the newspaper clippings about The Six Shooter and this particular show, and as the caller points out, thanks again for calling. That Brett Pont, one of them, I think in Sacramento, California, says Brett Ponson trades in his six shooter to play matchmaker. And so they used to have, the newspaper articles would advertise some of these shows, especially if they had new time slots or whatever. And that was, I believe, NBC carried The Six Shooter. Okay. Up next, I don't think Marco's coming in. I see on the list there's DJ Sandler filling in for Marco and Wake Up Sleepyhead. In fact, I thought the caller was DJ Sandler looking to gain access into the studio. But it wasn't. Thanks for listening. This is Arthur, 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. I'm just going to close out with some Henry Mancini. Have a nice afternoon.